Welcome to Horror Camp.
Horror Camp 3, Meet the Beast. I'm your host, Daniel, and together we're going to explore all things horror, from the good, the bad, the creepy, the kooky, the gory, the gritty, the queer, and the camp. On this episode, I'm going to be joined by Marion, where we're going to do a movie review, and later I'll be joined by special guest Leslie Simpson to talk about his experiences as an actor in horror film. But first, let's jump straight into Horror Camp news.
Consistent reports from witnesses to the effect that people who acted as though they were in a kind of trance were killing and eating their victims prompted authorities to examine the bodies of some of the victims. Medical authorities in Cumberland have concluded that in all cases, the killers are eating the flesh of the people they murdered.
So in horror news, over the last few weeks, we've seen the first look preview of the new TV series Hannibal, which has been produced by NBC. Also, we've seen more footage released of the new TV series Bates Motel. Just recently, we had a four-minute clip of Bates Motel, which I've put up on the Horror Camp Facebook page if you wanted to have a look there. And we've also seen a promo poster for Bates Motel. Both of these series look very promising. The casting is pretty solid as well for both of these. So I can't wait to see where they actually take these characters and to sort of see the fresh perspective that they bring to both of these rather classic horror and thriller staples. In movie news, we have seen the release of the Red Band trailer for Rob Zombie's next feature film, The Lords of Salem. Rob Zombie sort of divides quite a few horror fans out there. Some people think he's an absolute genius. Others think that he's just an overzealous horror fan who really has no skills and just throws a bunch of shit together. I myself sit somewhere on the fence, a bit more of my leaning towards he just throws a whole bunch of shit together. But look, he has gotten better with each film he's made and is really honing his skills. So look, I'm rather intrigued to what he's going to bring, to see what he's going to bring to Lords of Salem. And yeah, it actually looks pretty darn good. Classic, gritty Rob Zombie styling. But the story itself actually looks rather interesting. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. Now, here in Victoria, also dealing with horror movies, we've actually had a really exciting Possible campaign put together by Lee Gambian. Now, Lee is a huge horror fan, and he's also one of the contributing writers for Fangoria magazine. Lee knows his horror and wants to basically bring his favourite horror films and some hard-to-find horror films to the big screen here in Melbourne. So he put together the Possible campaign, and it's already met its target, but it's still open for more donations and to get more backing. The more backing it has, the better he can make these events. So to find out more, you can head over to the Horror Camp Facebook page and look for the link there. Otherwise, jump onto possible.com and look for the horror movie screenings at ACMI. Really looking forward to this coming about. Also, in movie news, we've got Aussie-made horror movie Inhuman Resources, also known as Red Ink, has had a Fangoria Presents screening in LA this week. You may have heard my interview with the movie's writer, Anthony O'Connor, on episode 43, I think it was, of Guy Fye. That's Guy Fye podcast that I did last year. That was part of the Homos and Horror episode. I'll be catching up again with Anthony in the next few weeks. He's a huge horror fan and also works professionally as a reviewer. So I'm looking forward to having a bit of a catch up with him here on Horror Camp in a few weeks. But it's really exciting to see more Australian horror getting broader releases, particularly out there in the rather hard to crack market of the US. Now, this month, we see the annual return of the campaign Women in Horror Month. So this is a campaign celebrating the contributions of female horror directors, artists, and creators. It's basically a campaign of awareness and equality that we all know the horror genre in particular rarely represents. So, this is a fantastic campaign. To find out more about Women in Horror, you can head over to their website, which is www.womeninhorrormonth.com, and you can also search Women in Horror on Facebook. There's a lot going on this month for that campaign. In the same vein, next month we've got a fantastic horror film festival that is being held in Tasmania, and it's called Stranger with My Face. This is also an event celebrating the contributions of female horror movie makers, and it provides a platform for emerging directors, artists, and movie writers to show their work. This year's event will be running from the 7th to the 10th of March, and it actually coincides with International Women's Day. There's numerous ways to get involved, and they're already launching little competitions for you to get involved, and you don't have to live in Tasmania to take part. To find out more, head to www.strangerwithmyface.com. Also, you can look them up on Facebook. This is a brilliant campaign, and it's really exciting to see more of these kind of events happening here in Australia as well. And last but not least is this month's Horror Hunk. The hunk pitching our tents on camp is none other than Leslie Simpson. Horror fans will recognise Leslie from his work in Dog Soldiers. He was also in The Descent as one of the main beasts or crawlers. And he's also in the soon-to-be-released Australian horror sci-fi Crawl Space. We'll be chatting to Leslie a little bit later in this episode. So without further ado, let's head into camp. Marion. So welcome to Horror Camp, Marion.
Thanks.
Now, you're going to be joining us in future episodes, helping us out with some horror book reviews, so we're looking forward to that.
Oh, so am I.
Now, first of all, let our listeners know a little bit about yourself and horror. Do you consider yourself a horror fan, and how do you consider yourself a horror fan?
Oh, absolutely, I'm a horror fan. Whether it's really cheesy Z-grade horror, yeah, or some of the best, most terrifying films and books ever made, I'm in. Cool. I love to be scared.
What's your favourite genre of horror?
I'm fond of the supernatural horror, but I think my favourite's got to be the human horror that lives underneath.
Ooh.
When you've got a situation where a nice small town with nice people suddenly finds itself in a situation where all the really nasty things come out about their personalities.
Cool.
And you realise that they're just like everybody else.
Awesome. So you're joining me here today. We're actually going to do a review of the movie The Descent. Now, in this episode, I'll also be interviewing Leslie Simpson, who stars as one of the monsters in The Descent. But there's another reason we're reviewing this one today, and that's because it's actually Women in Horror Recognition Month. And The Descent itself basically stars almost an all-female cast, and it's basically about a bunch of very kick-ass adventurous women. So I thought that would be an appropriate film to watch.
It was great. I was surprised at how into it I got. Basically, you've got a bunch of backpackers and soccer moms who suddenly turn into serious kick-ass women.
Yeah. Well, before we jump into The Descent, women in horror. Obviously, the horror genre has a bit of a checkered and annoying history of basically misogyny when it comes to dealing with women as characters. And there's not many female directors having a voice out there, well, in film in general, but especially when you turn to horror film.
Oh, absolutely. I think women directors might perhaps shy away from horror simply because they think they're going to have trouble finding an audience.
Yeah.
It does seem to be such a male preserve, and in most horror films, the women are either victims or sidekicks to the really, really bad guy.
Yeah.
And the few women who do work in horror, they don't do films like that. Mm. And unfortunately, their films, while being terrific, are sleepers.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
They really don't get the recognition they deserve.
Yeah, well, for me, one of my top three vampire films of all time, which is Near Dark, was directed by a female, and that was Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah, now, and she's fantastic. Yeah. And that movie, yeah, that's one of my favourites.
Definitely. So. You know, it did suffer a little bit because it came out around the same time as Lost Boys, or within the same sort of year as Lost Boys, so that had a bit of an effect on it, but I also do feel part of it was because she was a female director, but it was a beautifully told story and really, I don't want to go into Near Dark too much. I'm sure I'll review that another time down the track, but yeah, I thought she really brought something special to that story.
It was a side of the whole vampire story that hadn't even been thought about
in definitely. Film.
I mean, we were getting Dracula reruns everywhere.
Exactly. And, well, she herself was a Western fan. She wanted to make a dirty, gritty Western. And, you know, vampires were all the rage at the time, so she blended those two together quite beautifully.
Yeah.
And I think that captures really well in the film. What other female directors do you feel have been able to sort of get their story across in the horror genre?
Well, female directors, now you see, this is probably an example of how few there are. I'm actually having trouble thinking of many of them. Yeah. I can think of a few actors.
Yeah.
The obvious one, of course, is Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, of course,
As Ripley in the original film.
Yeah.
Which, you know, let the rest of the franchise go, that original film.
Oh, I'll
was
give,
a kick-ass
Alien
kick-ass
and
horror.
Aliens. Surely you've got to give number two.
Oh, maybe. I always thought that was a bit Rambo in space.
Yeah.
And Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Her work in The Silence of the Lambs, Panic Room. Although Panic Room was a fairly bad film, her performance was great because she was very strong.
Yeah.
Both of them bucked the trend of the damsel in distress.
I guess, we are seeing a few more women coming up through the ranks in horror as far as writers and directors and creators. A standout at the moment is, the Soska twins from Canada. Now, they're all the buzz at the moment, still doing very much independent movie making, but making quite a name for themselves in doing so, especially with their latest film, which is American Mary, which I was hoping to have a copy of today, but
I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, it looks really good. And again, that that in itself stars Catherine Isabel, who was Ginger Snaps.
Yes.
Ginger Snaps. She was also in a rather awful made-for-TV series of Carrie, which I don't know if you ever got to see.
Yes.
But, her herself, she's, she's got quite a name for herself in the horror film field as a female actress, too.
And there's the new version, I guess you could call it the remake of Carrie.
Yeah,
about to come out, and there's strong women all over that one.
Definitely. Well, look, with that one, you've got Chloe Grace Moretz playing Carrie herself, which is going to be great. So we know her from Let Me In, which was the remake of the Let the Right One In. Now, she, even in Let Me In, she played a dominant female, a strong dominant female in that. So I'm excited to see sort of what she brings to Carrie as far as that transition from the fragile to the broken to the empowered.
Yeah.
And also in that we've got Julianne Moore as the mother.
And that is just going to be delicious.
Yeah.
Carrie's mother, I think, was originally played by Piper Laurie in the first movie, and she brought the crazy pretty well.
Yeah.
But to have Julianne Moore getting her hands on it, I think we're going to see something really special.
Definitely, definitely. And also, the director is a female.
About so, time.
Yeah, like, finally, we've actually got a female director making one of Hollywood's next biggest horror movie productions, which is very exciting.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah. So, tell us about who were some inspirational women then in horror for you.
Whether
they be writers or actors or characters.
Well, Kathryn Bigelow, certainly. I mean, I've been really disappointed that she's gone away from horror.
Yeah.
Because she was doing so well.
Yeah, yeah.
And now she's doing war films.
Yeah, but she's an Academy Award winning war filmmaker now, so.
Yeah, I just want to see someone do a decent horror movie that is going to get up on the Oscars. I mean, the last one we had was Kathy Bates. Actually, Kathy Bates.
Yeah, yeah.
In her role as Annie Wilkes in Misery. That was a dangerous, dangerous woman.
Yeah.
Made all the more dangerous because she really did, in a weird way, have the main character's best interests at heart.
Mm,
and that's kind of what I mean by that human horror, that sense of, I'm doing what's best for you. And in a creepy kind of way, she was.
Yeah, she was amazing with that. I liked how she actually brought a sense of fragility at times to it as well, to that character, which easily that character could fall into a two-dimensional, just overbearing, crazy fan. And just those moments of cross between that classic soft feminine being carried through by Kathy Bates was amazing.
Yeah, she could be very, very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it didn't actually compromise her strength as a character.
Exactly. And that's, for me, that's what I look for in an empowered female role. When I look at that, I see, that captures it perfectly.
Yeah.
For me, I guess, like, you've got your classics, like Yvonne DiCarlo, who played...
Oh, of course!
So, who played Lily Munster, and, you know, she ran that house. You know, she ran that household completely. You know, the classics, you know, the original Morticia Adams, whose name escapes me.
Yeah, I was reading the other... Carolyn... something. But I was actually reading the other day about all the firsts that horror on television has actually broken. And the Addams Family was the first television show ever to show a married couple in one bed.
Wow.
Actually, Morticia and Gomez in bed together.
That's awesome.
That's the first time ever. And that was in a black comedy, a horror comedy. I think that's one of the reasons why I really like to get the junk food, the horror junk food out. And every now and again, you just find something that is just so perfect.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's why I download a lot of free ebooks from Amazon, and I will just read through them. And, you know, some of them might be terrible, but every now and again, you find one, you just go, yes, that's the right one. And it's written by someone you've never heard of.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to be Poppy Bright.
Yeah, yeah.
To be a good horror writer.
Definitely. Well, let's have a little bit of a look at The Descent. What did you think overall of the film? What were your impressions?
Well, if there was ever a movie that was designed to turn you into a claustrophobe, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not claustrophobic, but I was getting a bit tight around the collar.
Yeah.
I think the use of darkness in that movie is beautiful. I mean, it's a trope in horror that darkness is the thing and everything comes out of the dark. But when the only light you've got are tiny little headlamps and you never know what's around the next corner, you don't have time to look away from the screen or relax because it's going to get you.
Definitely.
Loved that.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, one, as I mentioned before already, a standout that was almost a completely female cast was definitely led by females.
And not college kids.
Yeah. And not a bunch of college girls with really tight tops bouncing around in slow motion underwater. Yeah, it was a bunch of empowered women. Right from the opening, we actually see the group of them whitewater rafting, laughing fear in its face, while the one male character is actually on the shore babysitting the little daughter.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, hello, this is cool. And that sets up pretty much these characters all the way through the film. They are strong, empowered, adventurous women who are really taking fear and owning it.
Yeah.
And I like sort of how that carries through the film and how that also affects each of them individually as well.
Mm. What struck me about the film was as things went on and the situation got worse and worse and the stresses on the character, that this was very much a female Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because, Shauna McDonald, who is probably the most fragile character at the beginning of the film, or at the beginning of the descent into the cave, by the end is not somebody I would ever want to meet in a darker alley or at a department store.
Yeah,
sale.
You don't want to cross her, that's for
no,
sure.
No, no. And Natalie Mendoza, too, the ferocity that just springs right out of her.
Definitely. She, I really like the subtleties of what she brought, where she was a very strong character from the get-go, and those little moments of weakness that she let show through that then fed her next level of strength. And I think that power play was really nice between
them. Oh, and and when you get the two of them together, and everything just sets up for the final time when they're together, and really, viewers, don't look away in that sequence at all.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It was funny, like, looking at the beginning, you even made the comment of they kind of look almost like soccer mums and things like that. But I like the fact that, yes, they're adventurous, strong women, and they didn't need to pull out all the cliches of them being short haircuts, you know, tough, you know, physically burly looking women. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well,
they had the flourishes there. They had the elements of classic femininity right down to the highlights of the curly locked hair and the floral scarves and things like that.
The character Beth, who comes out resplendent in her rose-patterned pajamas. I mean, takes a real woman to wear pajamas like that. She's not apologetic.
Yeah.
they wear what they want to wear. They just act like people. They're probably some of the most believable characters that I've seen for a while in a horror movie.
Definitely.
It's just so easy to go for the stereotype and they went away from it.
Yeah, they, you know, especially they got together in the cabin the night before and don't be too scared, men, but they didn't actually strip off into their underwear and beat each other with pillows.
Nor did they talk about men.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. You know, look, this... this is a quick little review of the film, but for me, the standouts were definitely, like you mentioned, the use of the darkness and the lighting was really, really clever, and the scares that allowed. They didn't jump too much into the cheap scares. You know, if they scared you, it was for a reason.
Oh, I mean, you had a couple of... I think there must be a rule somewhere that says in any horror movie, you got to have a couple of fake scares at the very start.
Yeah.
And they did that, but once we got down to the action, any scare that was there was part of the plot. It was going somewhere. And if you watch it in semi-darkness or even better in darkness, you're going to get the full effect.
Yeah. There's so many jumps in this film and they don't use that loud noise jump as well. It's relying very much on your visual. What you see makes you jump, which again, I love that technique in the scares.
It's that much more unexpected.
Yeah. So, out of 10 grappling hooks through the throat, how many would you give it?
Well, I think on the strength of the use of light and dark and Shauna McDonald's scary eyes, I'd have to give it 7 grappling hooks through the throat, maybe with a little half tongue.
Nice. Yeah, look, I'd actually give it the same. Look, Yeah, I'll give it 7 out of 10. For me, it was the strong elements. Definitely, I liked the design of the monster. I liked the use of the dark and the light. The scares were quite genuine, and the characters really quite, in the majority of the time, very believable. Mm. And I liked the arc of the story with it as well. There were a few little moments of cheese which did sort of grate a little for me. And look, the final ending of it, I kind of felt a little ripped off at that final ending. And I'm going, really, did they just tag on this ending because they quickly found out they were going to get funding to make the second part? So
did they need to go there?
Yeah.
It's one thing that a lot of horror movies do.
You can stop.
It's okay.
Exactly. I know they were trying to play a little bit on the psychological side of it, but I just felt it was a little weak.
Yeah.
In that I felt it was a little bit of a cheap tag on, but other than that, love the film.
Yep.
It's in my personal Blu-ray collection because it is definitely one of those that's quite a standout and has some good original moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, look, thank you for coming on to Horror Camp, Marian. And
my pleasure.
We look forward to having you back on camp soon to help us out with our book reviews.
I'm looking forward to it.
There are some places you really shouldn't go.
Oh, shit. Those things out there are real.
You're afraid of it.
This is no ordinary enemy.
Don't scare that easy.
You will never get another night's sleep as long as you live. You know what lives in the shadows now.
Now, I'm sitting here with Leslie Simpson. So, Leslie, welcome to Horror Camp.
Hooray! Hello.
So, Leslie, first of all, I should congratulate you because you have actually won the honorary title of Horror Hunk for February.
Have I really?
Yes, you have.
I have no idea why I could win a title like that, but I'm very happy, thank you.
Good, good. Well, look, you're pretty easy on the eyes. Obviously, that's not the first time you've heard that, you are the Horror Hunk for Horror Camp.
I am absolutely thrilled and honoured. Thank you very much. That's great.
You're welcome. So, now, thank you for taking time out of rehearsal. So you're actually rehearsing for Closer.
I am, yeah. A play written by Patrick Marber.
Awesome.
I think your listeners will perhaps know it from the film, really. It was adapted into a film, I think, around about 2005, mm-hmm. with Jude Law, Clive Owen, Julia Roberts, and Natalie Portman.
Cool.
But it was originally a play.
Awesome.
And we're doing the original version. The adaptation's somewhat different.
Okay. So, and that's going to be at Chapel Off Chapel.
It is.
In South Yarra.
It is.
And when does that kick off?
Because it's a play about infidelity, we thought the opening night should be Valentine's Day.
Perfect.
The perfect non-date play, basically.
Wonderful.
And it runs until 2nd of March.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, look, I'm actually wanting to explore a little bit about your career in horror. Now, for listeners out there, you might recognize Leslie Simpson, first of all, from Dog Soldiers, generally as the vomiting soldier.
The vomiting cavalier Milburn, yes, private first class.
So, well, first of all, Dog Soldiers, fantastic werewolf film, actually definitely in my top 5 of all-time favourite werewolf movies. So that's really, really amazing. Tell us a little bit about your experience on Dog Soldiers.
It was a very, very small film, mm-hmm. But we had an inkling virtually from the first day of shooting that we had something very, very special. We actually shot it in Luxembourg, not in Scotland, where it's set. And at that time, Luxembourg was quite a popular location for films. And at that time, there was a much bigger production going on, and we were this little cheap production. Not or rather relatively cheap production that was going on in the back lot. After about a week or so, the bigger production hemorrhaged all of its crew who just wanted to be part of our party.
Wow.
We knew that we had something really, really special. All of the cast bonded, the crew bonded, and we were the life and soul of the hotel, basically. We drank the place dry. And, when we were shooting it, it didn't even have distribution. It was produced by the producers of Hellraiser. So they were fairly confident that they would be able to sort of sell it. But at that time, werewolf films weren't really that popular.
Yeah, it did actually come quite out of left field for the time that it came out, which was 2005.
That was 2001. Actually,
2001.
I think it was released in Australia in 2005.
Yeah.
It was quite a bit of time before it actually took on the world.
Yeah.
The UK and Europe warmed to it straight away.
Yeah.
But because of that, the audience basically just built and built and built. It was a festival favourite, which is how it ended up being picked up.
Oh.
Pathé was sitting at the back of the auditorium at one of the festivals. I believe it was Fright Fest in London.
Oh.
And they bought it for a song, basically. I think they paid about $400,000 for it.
Now that's a good investment, God.
It was, yeah. Yeah. And they have made millions from it.
Yeah.
As it happens, at the evening of the premiere, I was actually sitting with the head of Pathé, and they weren't even anticipating making their money back on it. They just wanted to sell it so that they could have sell through on DVDs. They had an inkling that Neil was going to be some hot ticket at some point in the future, so they thought that they would invest minimally in this project and then pay for a much bigger project later on.
Wow.
Little did they know that Dog Soldiers itself was going to be such a huge success, which it really was. I mean, the opening weekend, it opened on 30 screens in the UK.
Yeah.
The second weekend, it was on 275 screens.
Wow, that's impressive.
It was very impressive, yeah.
That's a rapid growth.
And that seemed to go on around Europe.
Wow.
People just loved it.
So tell us a little bit about working on set. Was this your first film sort of working with that level of artistry when it comes to prosthetics and gore effects?
It was, yes.
Yeah.
So it was very very, very exciting for me. In fact, I shed a little tear the first time I saw it. When we went to the cast and crew and I saw that Pathé sign going round, I was overcome, really. It was too much. But I'm really into prosthetics. I don't know why, but I just love gore.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of horror, and I think that the prosthetics guys and the special effects guys really warm to me, because whenever there's a gore scene, I just say, more blood, please,
awesome.
Basically. So in the vomiting scene, that was actually real vomit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I stuck my fingers down my throat. That's actually not true.
I would have loved to have been the actor whose head gets vomited on by you. Yes, great.
it was actually, it was two-day-old vegetable soup.
Oh, delightful.
And I took it right to the back of my throat.
Oh.
just more blood, please, and more gore and more vomit.
Awesome.
In fact, I think you could now do a best of showreel of hairiest gore and vomiting moments.
Nice.
Really on the screen.
And you also had your decapitated head in that film?
I had my decapitated head in that film, which is currently sitting on the producer's mantelpiece.
Nice.
Yeah. But it was borrowed back for Centurion.
Awesome.
But actually, I mean, I've had my head cast 4 times now. Most people only get it once in their lifetime, but I've had it done 4 times by 4 different prosthetics guys. Of some of the top guys in the world. So I've been very, very lucky.
So you've just got the kind of head people want to cut off. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Or bash in. I've had it bashed in Doomsday with a baseball bat. I had it stuck on a pike in Centurion. I had it smashed in 5 different ways during the descent,
yes.
And it was decapitated and then thrown at a car in Dog Soldiers.
Nice.
So there we go.
Well, jumping, I guess, across to Descent. So Neil Marshall directed both Dog Soldiers and, I guess, was what brought you across to Descent.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. So what was it about Descent that made you jump on board? Now, obviously, you've gone from being a young little naive soldier to being pretty much the lead beast in an underground cave system. So what made you jump to that?
Well, I think when Neil saw me, he just thought, you look so demonic and so you look so evil. Actually, it's quite the reverse.
Yeah,
it's that role came to me. I didn't respond to it. Although, to be honest with you, ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to play a movie monster. So it was a dream come true.
Who was your inspiration on movie monsters?
Well, there have been lots. Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
Boris Karloff. Even Robert De Niro, who played Frankenstein,
okay.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But generally the older ones. I mean, people. My
more
heroes,
universal.
More universal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bela Lugosi, Ollie Reed. They've all had their their go at being movie monsters. These days they tend to use dancers and people that are more into movement.
Yeah.
And I think it's lacked something. Formerly, they would use actors. I mean, for heaven's sake, even Jack Nicholson has played a movie.
Yeah, he's played a werewolf. Yeah.
He has, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I always really wanted to be one.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate to have played what I think is generally accepted as one of the great contemporary movie monsters.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, so well, I'm very fortunate.
Well, Descent itself, I think Descent was a little bit of a slow burn film. A lot of people sort of discovered it here in Australia more through DVD, and later on it developed a lot more of a following. And I guess also with this month, next month we're heading into Women in Horror Month, and Descent itself being almost completely a female cast pretty incredible kick-ass women too at that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So...
Well, there is some suggestion that we're not males at all either. There is a female crawler in the film who crawls out the blood pool, but there is some suggestion in one of the metaphors for it that we're actually sperm.
Okay.
So so we could in fact be either we could be either sex really.
Okay. So
it's entirely peopled, but apart from Sarah's husband at the start of the film, for one moment. It could be entirely peopled by females, in fact.
Now, this particular beast that you played in Descent, it looked a little different from you, I have to say. What did it take to get into that role? As far as physically, what did you have to endure?
Well, we had to be... we literally had to be shaved from head to foot.
Mm-hmm.
Everything had to come off. And when I say everything, I mean... everything.
There's no hair where the sun don't shine.
Sun definitely didn't shine. The tweezers came out. Literally, everything had to come off.
Yeah.
And that had to be done quite regularly. Mm-hmm. So, bend over and take one for the team. Basically, it was very interesting. I like to do interesting things, so I didn't mind. But it was a trial. It did feel like we were being ritually sacrificed, being prepped for the slaughter. Basically.
So you're basically then covered in a kind of a KY jelly-like substance, or?
Well, the next part of the process was that we were spray-painted from head to foot, completely naked. By this point, it was probably about 3 a.m. in the morning in a British winter. So when I say there was nothing to see, there was literally nothing to see.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Spray painted from head to foot in this white, I guess it was a paint, but it was a little bit different. Mm. Then they would put the prosthetic on, which was just a couple of knuckles on our spine,
mm-hmm.
and then the top of our face.
For the brow.
For the brow. And that was literally it for the prosthetic. The rest of it was entirely us. A lot of people ask, was that a suit? No, it was not. That was entirely us. And then we had our veins painted in, etc. Then we had to be covered from head to foot in KY jelly. So if our core temperature was minus 15 by this point, by the time 7 a.m. rolled round and we were due on set, when the KY jelly was applied, we literally stayed at minus 15 degrees for the entire day.
Wow.
So it was freezing. We had to wear hypothermia jackets throughout the day.
Understandably. Well, so anyone wants to see Leslie Simpson butt naked running around caves, well, Descent's the one to see.
You see a lot of me butt naked. That's absolutely true.
And how many times did you get killed in that? Because I understand there was two of you who were playing the variety of monsters.
That's right. Craig Conway and myself pretty much played most of the main crawler scenes.
Yep.
There were a couple of inserts with other characters, and they were my theatre company at the time.
Okay.
But Craig Conway and I played the majority of them. Craig pretty much took the first half of the film. He's the one that you see in the at the pool, in the pool of light.
Crawling around in the background.
And then when... And the one that, the first big shock where it pans round the group and he's standing over.
Yep.
And then the first big fight. Then pretty much beyond that, most of it after that is me.
So he got all the glamour shots and you got all the pounding and all the...
I got all the pound. I mean, I got...
Beaten up.
Yeah, well, I guess I got all the gore shots because they know what it is that I'm good at. I'm good at getting beaten up and looking gory, yeah. So I got the blood pool, the underwater fight. Awesome. The first time you see one hanging from the ceiling, that was me, and lots more. The watch scene with the dog-like crawler that keeps bouncing back, that was all me. The one that jumps off the wall.
So how many times did you actually get killed in Descent?
I believe it was 5 times. Oh. I believe it was 5 times. It may in fact be more, because when I say that Craig took the first half, he was in the final. He's intermittently in it throughout, but he was also supposed to be in the final big fight. But because he had an accident on the set, his foot went through the set, and he badly sprained his ankle and tore a few ligaments. I ended up having to do 2 of the crawlers in that final scene, which is the fight with Juno and Sarah, where Juno is then left behind.
Yeah.
And Sarah gouges the eyes out of one, while Juno bashes the head again, bashes another's head against the rock. Well, I was both of those.
So after having your eyes gouged out, you quickly jumped up and had your head bashed against the wall.
And then had my head bashed against the wall.
Good day on set.
Yeah.
Great.
So it may actually be more than 5, but I do believe 5 is how many times I was killed on that.
Yeah. Wow. I guess looking at, you've had a bit of experience there with prosthetics and you're talking about your interest in prosthetics.
Mm.
The latest horror film I believe you're in, which is Crawl Space, which is about to hit cinemas hopefully by the end of this year, is that?
It should be sooner than that.
Great.
I would imagine. I think it'll be sooner rather than later.
So that itself was directed by first-time director Justin Dix. Now, Justin Dix is well-known for his career and expertise in gore effects.
He is the Wicked of Oz. Yeah. That is his that's his nickname, that's his trade name, and he pretty much has done just about every prosthetics heavy film of the last 10 years here in Australia. And in fact he worked on the latest Star Wars trilogy. He worked R2-D2
and C-3PO. Didn't he design
believe he did. I mean, I can't swear to that one. I know that he was working R2-D2.
Wow.
So but he will have undoubtedly had something to do with the design of C-3PO, because not only is he a wonderful director, not only is he fantastic at prosthetics, but he is also an art director on quite a few films that take place over here.
So, well, tell us a little bit about Crawl Space.
Well, I guess it harks back to early Cronenberg. In my opinion, people may have a different opinion to that, but it sort of has certain elements of films like Scanners. If you imagine Scanners crossed with possibly Alien and The Descent,
nice.
In fact, Crawl Space, I think the clue is in the title, and it takes place in Pine Gap, which, for those that know, is considered the real Area 51, which is in fact in the outback of Australia. It's joint run by the US and Australian governments, and as I understand it, they believe that it is the real Area 51. So everybody's pointing to the Nevada desert, but actually it's over here in Australia. Or that is one of the concepts within the film, shall we say.
Okay, and what do you play in this film? Are
I play
you
one
a
of the
monster
doctors.
Again?
Or? No. I play one of the doctors.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
So, can you let us know? Did you get your head decapitated in this one, or did you get to have some spectacular blood gory scenes?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, that's
all he's saying.
My head doesn't come off in this one, surprisingly.
Okay.
My head didn't come off in Straw Man. I actually made it all the way to the end in that one. But yes, I shouldn't say too much.
Okay.
Because it is very effects laden, mm-hmm. and it's also very imaginative. So to some extent, my death comes from my own imagination, possibly.
Ooh, possibly. Intrigue.
Possibly.
Look, I really appreciate what Justin Dix does very much so, because I think CGI is really, really destroying a lot of good classic horror. And
absolutely.
Yeah, so seeing a return to more traditional forms of gore effects, I just absolutely love seeing that coming through and what he does.
Well, you know, CGI has its place.
Definitely.
Cartoons, for example. Yep. CGI should be in cartoons, because basically these days, that's ultimately what you're watching with a lot of films.
Yeah.
And I'm a big cartoon lover. Mm-hmm. I love animation. And as far as I'm concerned, it's supposed to... It calms you down. You can watch the most violent cartoon, and it relaxes you, and it makes you feel childlike and lovely.
Yeah.
And CGI is wonderful for that. You know, these 3D films, and I think it's marvelous. And Pixar, they're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
But you can't have cartoons in an intense feature film because your head is going in two places. I mean, it's just not the same when a vampire blows up into little sparkles, which at the dawn of CGI, from Blade onwards, that's what happened.
The blood in Blade, I remember almost just tears streaming down my face going, what is happening? Just
but crack effect, you can't beat practical effects.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you...
There's a place for two, and I think they can work together quite well. I just think we're seeing too much of the CGI heavy side of it come through.
Yeah. There's only so many times that you can go, at a rubber hand coming around a door. That's true. Mm. But there is somebody there behind it, and they will prod you with a stick if they want to get something out of you. Whereas with CGI, you're acting to nothing, which suits me as well. I mean, I must admit, I'm comfortable with that. I've done a lot of green screen kind of stuff, and that's okay. But it's not the same thing. For me, that green screen stuff, they should be remaking Mary Poppins or Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Because that, you know, or The Water Babies. Do you remember that one?
No.
The Water Babies is, you know, part animation, part feature film.
Okay.
Part feature film. Mary Poppins, you know, it's fantastic. She goes into the park and there she's bobbing along and all that kind of stuff. All of that's fantastic. That's what they should do with it.
Yeah, so, yeah, I guess my childhood very much was... Jim Henson, so...
Fantastic.
Old school puppetry and things like that. So
yeah.
I guess I'm sort of leaning more towards
the
a
Muppets.
Return to that.
So you think that Dog Soldiers 2 should be with Muppets?
With Muppets, yeah.
Do you know what?
Sure,
that would be fantastic. Actually, that is the film to make.
Put Kermit on stilts running...
Yeah, fantastic.
Miss Piggy being an ass-kicking werewolf hunter?
Well, yeah, she could... it's that time of the month.
Is that right?
Well, but she's actually, she's nice at that time of the month. That would be cool.
Cool.
It's naturally.
Yeah. We should talk. We've got some ideas here.
I believe we have. Yeah.
So, with horror, what do you look for in a horror film to actually sit down and watch? What makes you grab a horror film and go, yeah, this is what I want to see?
The devil.
Yeah?
I like to be scared. I like really intense horrors. So even though I was part of it, it's horrible to say. I feel uncomfortable saying how much I love The Descent. Mm. But The Descent is my kind of film. I thought that was fantastic. That is a true horror film.
Definitely.
It's terrifying.
Definitely.
And I was terrified the first time I watched it. There was a big grin on my face. It was like, what the? I had no idea that that's what we... Well, I did, but I didn't realize it was going to turn out that good. Yeah. But my own personal favorite horror films always got the devil or some kind of demonic presence in there somewhere. Angel Heart.
Okay.
I love that film. I think that that's extraordinary. When I walked away from that film, I couldn't speak for about 4 hours.
Wow.
In fact, I had to walk home about 4 miles, because it was very early. I went to those early hours in the morning kind of screenings. Mm. And I was terrified all the way home, because I didn't have a clue that I was going to watch a film about the devil. I mean, I hope that was a spoiler there for anybody who hasn't seen it. I also loved The Wicker Man, which I suppose is in the same kind of territory. Yeah. Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
Brimstone and Treacle. I don't know whether you've seen that one.
No.
With Sting.
Okay.
Written by Dennis Potter. I think that's one of my favorites.
Okay.
That's a fantastic film. Devil Rides Out. If I had a dream job, and everybody who knows me is aware of this, my dream job is to be Faust.
Uh-huh.
I'd like a contemporary adaptation of the Faust myth that is really brutal, very true to the source. It can be an adaptation. By true to the source, I just mean the same intensity to it. People would imagine that I'd want to be Mephistopheles. No. I want to be Faust.
And
that's my dream job.
Who would you have direct that?
Who would I have direct that? The Coen brothers. No. Woody Allen. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Possibly Alan Parker, who directed. Or Roman Polanski, who keeps revisiting that. He seems very much in that.
The Tenant,
you know, literally The Tenant, Rosemary's Baby.
Mm. Because he did the three of the apartment films.
Repulsion,
yeah.
The Tenant, which is my favourite of all of his films. Mm. And then he revisited the whole concept with The Ninth Gate.
Yeah.
It seems to be something that obviously he's a tortured soul.
Yeah.
And
cool.
That would be my dream job. Or Alan Parker, because not only did he do Angel Heart, which is possibly my favourite horror film, but he also, most of the films that he makes are so overwrought and emotionally gripping, like Birdie, I don't know whether you've seen or Midnight Express.
Okay, yeah.
That I think he would be ideal for doing something like that.
Cool. Well, speaking of things that scare us, how about we grab the marshmallows and head over the campfire, and how about you tell us a little bit of a ghost story around the campfire? Okay, so, Leslie, scare me.
Well, when I was very, very young, I used to get visited quite a lot by a presence, a familiar, that used to put its hand round the bedroom door and then creep round the door and just show the upper part of its body. And it looked like a very, very old man. It looked like a tramp, and it was utterly, utterly terrifying. It used to visit me very, very regularly. And across the hall, we used to have a bathroom. Occasionally, it used to... If the bathroom door and my bedroom door was open and I could see straight across the hall, it would occasionally stand in the bathroom door. And I used to share a bedroom with my elder sister at that time when we were very, very young. And one evening I woke up my sister because I thought that I was imagining this. I was utterly terrified. It was visiting me on a very regular basis. I woke up my sister and she actually saw it too. So I was convinced that this thing was real. Now throughout my life, this thing has continued to visit me in one guise or another. When I was at drama school, It had, at this point, graduated toward being a dream creature, and that it used to come and visit me in dreams. And how it used to appear, it was almost like there was a tear in the fabric of the phenomenal world. It's very difficult to describe, but it's almost like a ladder in tights of the world that I was able to see that used to grow, and this creature would crawl out of it and would move across the room toward me like a milky kind of figure, but it was very, very old and very, very demonic looking. Eventually, I saw it in a dream. The last time I personally saw it was about 5 years ago, when it came up to me, put its finger through the middle of my head, and said, "I created the world. I created you, and you've got hell to pay." At which point I thought that I was actually cursed and that this thing wasn't doing me any favors. I ended up putting that very line in a film that I did called Straw Man. So for anybody who gets to see the film, you will see that scene. Wow. Because there are elements of that concept within it. But that's actually not the story that I'm telling. I'm giving you the precursor to one of the things that actually happened. There was a long period between when I was a boy and when it started manifesting as this demon in my dreams, the same creature. But during that period, whoever it was, whoever I would be going out with, whoever my partner was at that time, used to see in my presence a very old man that would always be looking around the door. And it would terrify them, and they had no idea what it was. So I would tell them, it's clearly something that is stuck to me, because I've had this thing here ever since I was a child. And there was one particular partner that I had who, to my knowledge, had never seen this thing and never mentioned it, and certainly had no fear, had no concept, and the subject was never brought up. But there was one day that I was staying in an apartment that was a share house, and there was a chap who was staying in the next bedroom to me. While my partner was staying with me in my room, this chap was next door. One afternoon, I came through the door, and this chap who was in the next bedroom was cowering behind the TV, and he was utterly, utterly terrified. He was on the floor and he would not move. So I walked in through the door and said, "Are you okay?" And he was, "No, has it gone? And I said, What's the matter? Are you okay?" And he said, "There was something coming down the stairs and put its hand," because the stairs, the bottom of the stairs led into the lounge. And he said he saw something putting its hand round the door, and there was nobody in the house. And when he looked closer, this old man, this old demonic kind of creature, poked its head round the door. And I got so terrified, it just would not go away. It did not disappear, it was just looking at me. And I've been gripped in this corner for the past 4 hours, that he was terrified to come out. At which point my partner, unbeknownst to me, who had not seen it, just said, "Oh, don't worry, it's Les's familiar." Just like that, just off the top of her head. 2 days later, I discovered that, actually that's not true. That very night, I discovered that my bank account had been raided. And that it was in the days when you'd have to go into the bank to withdraw money. I went to the bank and a lot of money had been taken out of my account. And I wondered, clearly I said, this is wrong, something's happened. And they said, "Well, somebody came in this morning and took some money. We've got the transaction, you took some money out this morning." We had a look, and it wasn't me. I had not been there. 2 days later, the police came to the door to arrest my neighbor, the chap, because he had stolen money out of my account. And it is my belief that this demonic presence had pinned him to the floor because he had wronged me.
Wow. Wow. don't cross Leslie Simpson.
The truth is, this has actually happened on many occasions that people have, that things have. I find that I don't ever really have to take revenge on people. Yeah, but I always try to. I always try to forgive them so nothing happens. But it's true. Yeah.
Wow.
But that was the first experience that I had of that, of seeing it in action.
Wow. I had chills.
That's good. There we go. That's my campfire story.
Wow. Well, shit. That's very impressive.
Ta.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule, Leslie. And
thank you.
It's been a pleasure having you here on camp.
Cheers.
And look, we look forward to seeing much more of you, naked and dressed, in future horror films.
Well, actually, if you get along to Closer, you will see me mostly naked.
Great. Ticket sales are going through.
I'm not fully naked, yeah. but I'm mostly naked.
Look, that's good enough for me. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you. Cheers, Daniel.
And that's all we have time for, so I'd just like to say thank you to my special guest, Marion, for joining me for today's review. And we look forward to having Marion on camp in future for further book reviews. And a special thanks goes out to Leslie Simpson for taking time out of his rather hectic schedule to sit and chat with us today. You can catch Leslie at Chapel Off Chapel, starring in the stage play Closer. To find out how to get tickets, you can head on over to Chapel Off Chapel's webpage and follow the links there. I also want to say thank you to everyone who is getting involved on Facebook and Twitter. I love hearing your comments and appreciate all your feedback. If you do want to join in the conversation, you can check out Horror Camp Podcast on Facebook, and you can also follow us on Twitter, and that is simply at Horror Camp. Well, I'm Daniel, and I look forward to bringing the camp back to your horror next time. See you.